Hello, and welcome to Project Hearthstone Become Legendary. I'm your host, Franco the Speedy Marufo, and this is episode 8, The Day We Became Legendary. On this week's show, as promised, we have an interview with one of the top legendary players on the scene. It's our very own BG the Brave. BG finally hit legendary rank in the final hours of last season, but to call him one of the top players on the scene is tantamount to calling Britney Spears a thespian. The good news is, if he can do it, so can anyone, and this episode is all about how you can replicate his success. So, enjoy.
Oh, it's good to see you again. Pull up a chair by the hearth.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Project Hearthstone Become Legendary. We are super stoked this week to have a very special guest on the show. He is the number 1,000 or something ranked legendary player in the EU. He is consistently at the bottom of the legendary tables on the EU server. It's our very own BG the Brave. How are you doing, BJ?
Thank you for that, Franco. I think not only am I probably the worst ever legendary player in the EU, but probably if you lined up the Asia server, the NA server, and put them all together, I'd still probably be the worst.
Mate, you are the best at being the worst. So, you know, you're in that elite category of, you know, looks good being shit. Yeah, and we're not only pleased to welcome yourself onto the show, obviously as a guest this week, no less. But we've also, as a special treat to our listeners, we don't have just one shit Hearthstone player on. We've got two. It's Mr. Tom Rograx Layton. How are you doing?
I thought you were going to introduce me as a pro player for the week, mate. I am pretty pro. I mean, you've seen me play, man.
we've seen you getting free ups at rank 16 on Ladder Tom.
It was rank 15, thank you very much.
Dude, a wee second ago you were talking about how you hate playing Mech Mage, but you were playing Druid at the time. That's some fucking elite shit skills right there.
This is why I do my ladder at 3 a.m. in the morning when it requires no brain power to play my Hunter deck.
Yeah, I do that too.
Mate, I'm watching Tom play on the spectator mode. That's it. Yeah.
Well, that's clearly bullshit because I'm not logged in, mate. So that shitter must be someone else.
I thought it was someone else. Dude, when you said, "Oh, I hate playing against Mech Mage," and then I looked at the screen, I'm like, "Am I watching Tom's game here? He's playing Druid this month. What's going on?"
Well, I hate playing against that too now. That upset me. I just hate Mech.
So it's a special show this week, folks. Obviously, you know, normally we like to dilute the shitness on the show. We're getting like an actual legitimately good player on at some point, but we've got like half an argument for saying that BJ is, at least for this, for 1 week only, legitimately good, because for 1 week only he was legitimately a legendary player.
One day, mate, that's right.
Yeah, right at the end of the season. Last day of the season he was a legendary player.
Oxford University Press, and BJ's just texting me getting all excited about his 5-game series to legendary and some bullshit.
So I thought it would be interesting this week, rather than getting someone actually good on and questioning them about how it is they got so good, we just talk to you, BJ, you know, because obviously you are a fucking moron. I'm thinking that if you can hit legendary, anybody can do it. So, like, what?
Well, it's proof's in the pudding now, isn't it?
Kinda, really. No, I mean, you've inspired me. You've inspired me.
Franco was like, right, no.
You can do it, anyone can do
yeah,
it.
Kinda.
Like, no more weekly challenges, that's it now, I'm hitting legendary.
That's it, yeah, totally. Now I know it's possible. Now, when someone's like mentally challenged, they can do it. Like, I reckon I've got a chance here.
Do you know what, dude? It's really funny that you just said something there, but it's really funny that you said that, because you just said, now I know that it's possible. And I know it sounds stupid, but like, I've been playing this game now for about 6 months, and it was like, I realised there was something in my head where I really did not believe it was possible for me to hit. I thought, you know, like, you're just grinding, and it's just a grind, and then you have this
voice
streak,
and
it's like a tease that you're doing really well, and then you lose three, and you go down, and it's like... And I really like, I watch these pros, and you see like when they actually turn from rank one to legend, and they barely bat an eyelid, you know. And I just think, fuck you, you know. And like, but I realize, like, I think I have crossed like some sort of psychological barrier, I really do. I really feel like just hitting it. It just makes me think, well, of course it's possible. And so like now I'm you know, they've started this next season and I've only had like two really good sessions, but I'm already down to rank 9, I think. This early in the season, it's rank 9 or rank 10.
That's pretty good going, yeah. So I mean, what do you think was the sort of crossing point for you? When why do you think it was last season specifically that you managed to hit a legend after like so many months of slogging it out?
Well, I think first of all, so many months of slogging it out, you can't sort of deny the fact that, you know, you are learning all the time. You do have to go through. You can't just pick this game up and within a month become legendary. You know, you have got to learn. You've got to learn the cards. You've got to play. You've got to play the meta decks. You know, like I get very excited by. I still do. I get very excited by new decks. Or you know, you see Colento hit or Savige or someone hit legend with a, you know, a mech mage deck, and you think, well, if I just make these five changes to Colento's legendary mech deck,
I'll make that much better. Yeah.
then clearly I will have improved. I mean, it's like, no, you know, what you need to be doing is learning the plays, learning. It's far less important. Like, the great thing about Hearthstone is it's really easy to get a legend-worthy deck, you know, for almost any class, right? Like, you could go on halfpawn.com now and find any class you want. Say you want to hit legend with Paladin. You can find a Paladin deck that's hit legend. Say you want to hit with Warlock. You can find a Warlock one. That's actually the easy part. What is harder, I think, is understanding the meta, i.e. what are the decks that you're going to be coming up against, what cards are they playing, how do your cards play around those cards. This requires a lot of, like, conscious effort. You know, I mean, Tom, you were saying, weren't you, a minute ago about how you've got your strategies to play at 3 a.m. and play, yep, Face Hunter, because at that point, everyone's absolutely knackered, and it requires no thought, although I disagree, I do think it does require thought, but you're just on autopilot, and you can get wins.
Pretty much, yeah.
But what I'm realising is you can't get to legendary being on autopilot. That's what I've learned. It's like when I went on, and we'll come to it later, but when I went on my run from rank 3 to legend, what I would say was the most focused I've ever been playing Hearthstone. Like, and
just
I was
in your life in general.
Well, to be honest, dude, my life at the minute, yeah, probably in life in general. Like yeah. I was just super focused, and I was talking to myself out loud. I was questioning stuff. I was like, what is he likely to play here? Okay, well, obviously, Knife Juggler's a good player here, but if I play Knife Juggler, he's just going to backstab it, right? So I'm not going to play a Knife Juggler. Instead, I'm going to play Shielded Minibot, because if he backstabs it, it's the... So it's going through that kind of, like, questioning players, and even more so when it goes wrong. But the good thing was, like, when I lost the game, especially in that run from, like, rank 4 to legend, for example, when I lost the game, I knew where I lost the game. Like, I really did know where I'd lost it. I was like, it was literally that one play at turn 5 when I did this, and that's where I lost tempo, and this is what happened. And I didn't play around Holy Nova, or I didn't play around, you know. So, to me, it's when people lose, they get, and when I say people, I'm not preaching. I'm talking about me. This is what I've done for 6 months. When I lose a game or two games, I get shitty, and what I want to do is I go and change the deck. So I go, oh, it must be that I need an extra. I'm losing to Hunter, so I must need an extra Taunt. Or so I make a change to the deck. Or even worse, I go, fuck this deck. This deck's shit. So I go and pick a new deck completely.
Yeah, I think but, consistently, like that's what you're saying there about sort of noticing when you've lost and why. I think that was the difference for me in terms of being able to consistently get to single digits on my rankings, like consistently get, you know, past rank 10 when I'm going up ladder, was just like playing the same deck over and over and realising when I'd lost, why I'd lost, at what point in the game, like at what play, at what point when what card came up, that was the turning point for me, you know. Yeah. And I think that's how I recognised it myself. Certainly, like sort of a next evolution in my game, and something you said earlier on as well about like that you really love keeping up with the game and the meta and the decks that are coming out. You get really excited by new decks and all that kind of shit, and you keep your head in the game. And I think that's like the next level for me, really, you know, because like I keep my head in it here and there, but you're like super passionate about it, and that's what I've noticed when me and you have played together. We'll like sort of play in the same account and we'll sort of advise each other, we'll sort of do a sort of dual play. What I noticed, the biggest difference between me and you, it's not the sort of the decision making process, you know, the decision making process usually kind of goes along the same lines. It's the fact that you have a much greater knowledge of the decks that are coming. So like we'll be playing against something and I'll be thinking, alright, it's, I think the most notable time was when we're playing against some shaman deck and I was trying to play around all the AoEs and you're like, no, it's not that shaman deck, it's this shaman deck, and he doesn't have them, you know. And
oh yeah, he didn't have the lightning stuff.
That's it. And like, but the thing is, like, you had to say it a couple of times because I'm so fucking used to it, you know, because I'm just not keeping up with that current meta, I'm not keeping up with that new deck. Whereas because of that, you've got that passion about it, I think that's like the next level. If I was wanting to approach the high ranks on ladder, not even get a legend, but approach those high ranks consistently, I think that's the next thing I would need to do, would be get into keeping up with the decks and really knowing what the different decks are all about and what's coming up, you know. But it's interesting that you mentioned both those things, because those two things are sort of recognisable for me in terms of, you know, the sort of skill level. Because we even played each other in the league, and I beat you.
You won 3-2.
And it was mainly because I was using decks that you weren't used to, and in terms of the actual decision making process, in terms of playing the game, we're pretty much the same. You know, we're pretty much sort of at the same sort of bit, and that knowledge of the decks, I think, really pushes you up, you know, from like consistently me consistently hitting like rank 7 or 8, but you consistently getting to rank 2, 3 and even now legendary, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, a lot of people have in the way in terms of learning how to play the game and learning how to get better is an ability to abdicate responsibility, and it happens a lot in games. Like, I mean, in League, people often blame their team. In Hearthstone, I mean, I suffer from it as much as anyone. Oh, it's like, oh,
is that League of Legends, Tom?
Yeah. But in this, I'm like, whenever I lose a game, I'm always like, oh, it's RNG. I mean, I lost that because I got unlucky. I lost RNG, and yes, sometimes that's the case, but most of the time, if you're playing the game perfectly, you'd be winning the game. And like when you came over a couple of weeks ago, BJ, and you had all these spreadsheets and you're all into learning it, and I'm just here like blaming the cards that they got and blaming the time they picked things and the top deck they got. When in reality, if I was playing it perfectly, I'd probably have won, and I can learn from that and go back.
Yeah, I mean, I've got five things written down here that I want to cover, as in like how that I think are five key cornerstones, and some of our guests have covered them as to hitting legend, but you guys have both just covered, you've covered two of them there. One is blame. Like, I'm playing guys all the time. Like, I love playing. My favorite thing to do on Hearthstone still is to play friends. Like, I'll quit ladder to play you, Tom, best of three, or play you, friend. Like, that's my favorite thing to do, because I like the social aspect of it, and also I like the fact that we're learning together. But you're absolutely right. Like, I play people, and often it is friends, where I play a game and say I win the game. They'll go, oh, I'd have had your last turn if you didn't do this, or I was one turn away from what, you know, like they basically use blame. And like, I think that's the one thing I recognise now is I'll never, ever, ever blame RNG or blame the cards. Because even if it was RNG, sometimes it is, you know, sometimes it genuinely is RNG, but never blame it, because what that means is you're not asking yourself the right questions. You're not focusing on where did you lose the game? Like, because often where you lost the game was the mulligan, and we'll come on to that, but often that's where you lost the game. So you can go right back to, as soon as you interact with a choice, a decision, and the first choice decision you get is, well, the first choice decision you get is building the deck, I guess. Mm. The second choice decision is the mulligan. You know, and then there's other decisions like, when did you use coin? When could you have used coin? Do you know what I mean? Like, you coined out that knife juggler turn one. But what happens if you'd use that coin turn four to put a sludge belcher down? How would that have changed that match? So this, it's too easy to just blame, oh, well, I drew this card. That's weak mentality. And I think you've really got to get into self-analysis a little bit more. But Franco, your point there about the conscious thing, like, I would say that playing this game up to say rank 12, you can have, if you've got a good deck and you've got you've got good deck, you've got a few legendaries, it's a good deck. You can hit rank 12 without really any sort of conscious thought, you know, without overthinking it too much, just by playing on tempo, playing decent cards. I think you can hit rank 12. But I'd say that after rank 12, like, what the one of the things that separates those guys out from that point on is how much do they then start to getting to this more conscious play style where you're actually asking questions, like you're saying, well, why am I playing this and what's my next turn going to be? And if I play that, what? How does that mess up my combos? Or what combos might I draw? A big question, and if you watch the pros, they do this all the time, is what could I draw into? They're planning for RNG. They're making it work for them. Mm. Someone need to mute them. It's going a bit...
Hello?
I'm fine. I've got my thing muted.
Okay. So I think, yeah, just asking those questions, and that's the next big thing that gets you down from, say, 10 to 5, probably, is starting to think consciously about your games. And a good way to develop that, for anyone who's wanting to, you know, you're at that point, is go and watch a stream, watch a pro play, or watch a tournament, preferably one that's not even live, actually. It's even better because you can pause it. You can go on YouTube and just type in Hearthstone VODs, and you can bring loads of them up, or Gamer VODs, or Game Graphy, that's another one. And anyway... watch the game and just pause it. And when it's his turn, say, right, what would I play? What would I play here? And then, once you've made your decision, press play and watch what they actually play and see how often... And you'll be surprised. You know, sometimes you'll get it right. You'll pick the right player that's the same player that they play. But you'll be surprised how many times the player that you thought was the obvious player, they don't play that player.
See, the thing is with that, dude, like, I've done that a few times, and the only issue I've got with that when I'm watching these sort of, you know, like, top-ranked in the world legendary players is, you know, I'll pause it and I'll make my decision, and then they make their decision, and it's not the same as mine, and I just think, well, I mean, obviously they're a fucking idiot, and I stop watching, obviously, at that point, because I think, well, he's lost now. He's lost, you know, and I don't get as much from it, but I mean, maybe some of the listeners will get more from it. If they... you know, maybe they watch it through, and or maybe like, you know, maybe they will learn a bit more than me. But I just, well, you know, when consistently they are not doing what I would do, you know, I just think, well, this is obviously some kind of con, you know. So,
yeah, of yeah. course, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, especially when it's, you know, like you know, that tournament winning player that you're watching, Franco, you know, top 16 legend.
Yeah, surprising how often they make poor decisions. You know, that's what I always think. Yeah.
Well. I mean, obviously, that's the other thing, you know, like, actually by doing that, sometimes you will genuinely spot their mistakes, you know, like, if they then lose the game, maybe your decision was the right decision, maybe they, you know, I watched a pro stream the other day, I saw him miss lethal, I was like, Jesus, I mean, they do make mistakes, but they make mistakes far, far less.
Yeah, you know, so, it's few and far between, you know, and in all honesty, when I've watched some of these things, like, some of the times, sometimes it's what they don't play. Like, it's the options that they've got, and you think there is this really obvious option, and it's even they've got, like, spare mana for, like, throwing an extra card down or something, you know, and they don't play it. And, like, those are the most genius bits, because, like, you think, well, why is he not playing it there? It's like, 'cause he knows what's coming, and he knows he needs to hold that back for such and such, blah, 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 or he's got ready to get two minions on the field, and he knows an AoE is coming, or something like that.
Well, let's have a practical example, right? So let's say, I don't know, you're playing a rogue deck, yeah? And you're playing, you are rogue, and you're playing against mage. And let's say the mage, he has an empty board, yeah? And he puts on his spell, and then he throws down Sludge Belcher, okay? Now, maybe, let's say, I don't know, you chuck down a South Sea Deckhand to check for Mirror Entity. It's not Mirror Entity. So what spell do you think he's got?
Duplicate.
Right, duplicate, yeah? Do you agree with that, Tom?
Yeah,
He's got a Sludge Belcher down, he had the spell down before. Okay, secret down before, sorry. So we're assuming he's got duplicate, right? So now, before, like, I'd be like, well, I have to just play into it, because if I don't play into it, he's just going to hold me up, I'm going to lose tempo for the whole game. But what I realised is, well, no, you don't have to play into it, because what I can do, well, how would you play around that?
It depends what the health is at, and, like, what all our, like... all the things you've got in your hand and things, because you could just wait for him to put down something else, and if you've got removal on your hand when he puts down the something else, which hopefully isn't as good as Sludge Belcher, you kill that instead, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And the other way you can do it is, so that's the easy way, right? If you've got removal like a backstab or an abyss, it's easier because you're just waiting for him to build up the board. But the important thing to do is to keep building up your board, because you can build up your board for two turns, not attack. If he attacks you with Sludge Belcher, you're going to kill the Sludge Belcher anyway, but he won't trigger duplicate, because you have to attack him to trigger duplicate. So you just build up your board. So say you play Spectral Knight, Spectral Knight, Azure Drake, something like that. And then now you've got the minions on board, so that even if you didn't have removal, if you now attack into Sludge Belcher and duplicate, so he's going to put two more Sludge Belchers down, you've got like 3 5-6 mana drop cards on the table in play that you can attack with. So you've got such a massive tempo advantage on him. You just keep killing those Sludge Belchers is easy now. Do you see what I mean? So
it's the same way when a hunter puts down Snake Trap into it, you know, and it's like you're forced to go to the face. And you're like, well, I might as well keep on playing minions and going to the face, you know, because, you know, I really can't play into this Snake Trap if he's got like a taunt out. If he's got like a knife juggler out, you know, you can't really afford to sort of take that business. So you find other ways to get around it, and it's always interesting when that happens, when you're like, I don't know what this trap is, but I'm gonna go to face anyway. And then as soon as you go to face, you're like, right, I know what it is, and that forces me to play in a certain way, even though normally I would start removing minions at some point.
Go on, Tom. Yeah, and I was just going to say, the only thing with Hunter is, if a knife juggles out, it's more obvious, but the thing with Hunter is, if you hit minions, it could be a Snake Trap. If you hit face, it could be an Explosive Trap, because Explosive Trap's come back into popularity in a big way recently with Face Hunter. So it just makes it interesting that you, in the way which you interact with it, in depending upon what you can... Ah, screw it. I just messed up my sentence really badly, but you get my point.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, man. It's a bit like, I'd say that it works better against the mage example, because that's a slow playing deck. Whereas with Hunter, you're on a time limit, right? You know, like to ignore minions can lose you the game. So that's why Snake Trap's really good, because it's like Snake Trap in a way works for the Hunter, because the Hunter's like going, great, so you're not going to kill my minions now. Fantastic. Okay, so I'm going to hit you with my weapon, my kill commands, my hero power, and all these minions that you're leaving on the board. Fantastic. Oh, and then when I get a taunt out, I'll get my snakes anyway. Yeah. So it is harder against Hunter, but again, it's all, you know, Franco's play is the right play.
Oh, yeah.
If it's situational, like, depending on health and whether this taunts up and stuff.
It always is, though, isn't it, really, depending on how... It's all about context. You can't say, right, this is one card here, one card here, what do you do? You've got cards in your hand, you've got cards on the board, you've got health to take into account, and sometimes even armor. It all depends on the situation itself.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think, you know, that's a massive thing. Now, I think there's a few other skills that I think some of our guests have talked about that really helped me get from, I'd say, rank 5 to legend. And this is like the next level where I think I've kind of taken my game to. But again, only take my game to this when I'm super concentrating and conscious of it. The first thing is playing around cards, right? So now what I used to do is playing around cards is I'd go, right, it's turn 4, I'm playing against Priest. I'm going to play around. I know he could play Holy Nova next turn, right? So I don't want to leave my board with loads of 1 and 2 health minions, because I'm going to get AoE'd. So there's that type of playing around cards, right? Which I've kind of done that for a while now. And again, the one that always gets me is fucking Soul Priest, Circle of Healing. For some reason, I just can't.
Mate. Look, when I was up at yours, and mate, you just played it every time, dude. You were just fly into it. I'd be like, no, this is fine. I've got it.
It's like some sort of genetic that's missing in my brain. It's the Anansi Soul Priest Circle genetic, and I just don't have it. My brain just won't remember it. But all other things, like, so there's that type of playing around cards. I think that's really important. But the other type of playing around cards, which is something that I started to do, and this really helped my game, is playing around cards from the beginning of the game. So it's like writing your 6-month plan up front, or writing your goals for the next year up front in January. It's the same thing. It's going, right, okay, I'm playing against Warrior. Okay, cool. What are his main threats in this deck? How does he win the game? Right, he wins the game by Alexstrasza in me, Gore Howl in me, Ragnaros in me, and Gromming me to death, right? Okay. So what have I got to counter this? Well, I've got a big game Hunter, I've got 2 Silence, I've got Harrison Jones. So what that means is you decide at the start of the game is that you're going to use those cards to counter those cards. And this requires a lot of discipline. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, if he's got a Death Bite, for example, in his hand, and you've got Harrison Jones, and you're down to 5 health or something, that you don't use Harrison Jones because you were saving it for Gore Howl. Of course you would use it. So you have to improvise from this plan if it's going to save you, you know, if it's better to do so. But you have to consult the plan that you made. So in other words, he's probably going to throw a Baron Geddon or a Dr. Boom out there to try and bait out your big game Hunter so that he can then slam his Grom, his Ragnaros and all that stuff. you've now got to say, okay, do I BGH now, or do I save that BGH? That is there another way I can play around Dr. Boom? If there is another way of playing around Dr. Boom, I would suggest you play around it. Again, it's not this is difficult advice because it's not black and white. You have to assess the situation. You have to consider, am I going to lose too much tempo if I do wait? You know, all that sort of stuff. But this really, really helped my game. Like, I'm playing Warrior this season, and I'm my mirror matchup against other Warriors is really high. And it's because I'm just being so disciplined. I'm not wasting a Black Knight on a Sludge Belcher or it might not be a good example, a Harrison Jones on a Fiery War Axe. You know, I'm saving it. I've got specific cards that I want to play around. And that really started to up my game once I started to do that. You know, because you're taking away, essentially, your opponent's way of winning the game. You know?
Yeah, obviously. But, I mean, again, that does require knowledge of your opponent's deck. And that's when your sort of passion for keeping up with the current meta comes into play, I guess.
Yeah, it does help. It does help, and that is a key thing, is knowing what the key meta decks are. But I mean, right now on ladder, for example, we know we're going to see Mech Mage. You know, you're going to see two types of Hunter. You're going to see Face Hunter. You're going to see a more mid range Hunter. If it's Face Hunter, you know it's Face Hunter because they're going to have charge minions. They probably play Abusive
Wolf Rider,
Sergeant,
yeah.
Wolf Riders, Arcane Golems, and as soon as you know it's Face Hunter, you know they've got explosive traps. You know, whereas if it's a mid-range Hunter, then they're going to be playing freeze traps and snake traps. But you know you're going to face that. You know you're going to face Druid. You're always going to face Druid on ladder. Like, Druid is just a solid 50-50 deck. So, you know, against Druid, your only question really is, well, is it a sort of ramp Druid with loads of big taunt minions, or is it a combo Druid? And again, if you're seeing lots and lots of card draw early on, it's probably combo Druid. If you start to see taunts like Senjins, for example, then you know it's probably going to be, it plays a bit slower. You know it's going to be the ramp one. So I think you can, you don't need to kind of know every new innovation on ladder. You just need to know what the key kind of concepts are.
Yeah, I guess. So some solid rules that most decks will go by. And it's only when someone throws you a curveball that you'll, that you get taken by surprise. But I guess that's only for so long as well, you know, like decks evolve and things. But if you're playing a ladder consistently, you're used to seeing certain decks. If they change, you know, in sort of slight ways, like I think, what were you saying, Fel Reaver's making its way into a mage deck these days?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I suppose you'll notice that, you know, you'll consistently notice that and be like, right, okay, well, I just need to work out how to deal with that now, you know, and your play style just sort of keeps up with it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, those little innovations, that's when those innovations matter. I think the point I'm trying to make is that there are these other ground rules that people need to be way more concerned with than making innovations to their deck. You know, like, yeah, you might lose a game, but do you know what? You're probably going to play about 200, you're probably going to play about 500 games or something in a season. So just losing one game is irrelevant. What you need to be doing is hitting a 65% win rate across 500 games. That's what's going to get you to Legendary. Not losing that one game because, oh, that clever guy created this new innovation that you're only going to see once in 500 games. Great, lose the game, write it down, remember it, move on. You know what I mean? The other thing, and I think Chance mentioned this when we had him on, and he was so right, is about minor mistakes. Like, the biggest difference between the guys who are getting, I'd say, up to rank 5 and the guys who are getting to actual legend now from rank 5, I think is minor mistakes. And this is probably the hardest one of the lot. Like, because you don't know that you're making these mistakes. And this is why I think laddering with a friend is so important. I've seen all the pros doing that. Being able to talk through decisions. Because you can help each other spot what you don't spot. But minor mistakes are... The way I feel like I pushed through last season with the minor mistakes was by each turn asking myself, like, trying to find several different plays in any one turn. So rather than just go, well, I've got 4 mana, I'll play Knife Juggler, Hero Power. I'll go, okay, I could go Knife Juggler, Hero Power. What else could I do? Well, I could play Senjin. What else could I do? Well, I could press Hero Power and pass. Why would I pass? Well, that's because I could then use my Knife Juggler next turn. What would I use my Knife Juggler next turn with? Oh, I could now play it with that 3-drop instead. Do you see what I mean? So it's asking yourself for several players, and when you consciously go through that process, what often happens is the second idea that you came up with is better than the first. You know, I'd say 60% of the time your first idea was right, but sometimes you find new players, and you it might be a player that's not this turn but affects next turn, and you're like, ah, that's going to be so good. I wasn't thinking about next turn. So it's bringing these things together. You know, it's being conscious of your players. It's playing around cards from the start and during each turn, and also being super aware of minor mistakes. The other way of learning from the mistakes as well, I guess, is obviously when you lose a game, when something goes wrong, is saying, where did I lose the game? What did I do wrong? You know, what play cost me in the end?
All the stuff you've mentioned, I don't think any of it's groundbreaking. You know, like, all the stuff we brought up, I don't think any of it's groundbreaking. But what all that shows you is that, like, well, ain't no lie then. You know, like, everything that all the players
have... Ain't no
lie. Everybody we've got on, they've all been saying the same thing. You know, now you're reiterating it, you know, and we all agree with you. Yeah. And it's just, like, well, that's... All it means is, like, well, that ain't no lie. Like, if you want to hit legendary, you know, and even if you are sort of mentally challenged, like BJ... You know, if you follow these rules, like you can do it. You know, I think that's you are, you know, the prime example of, you know, if you follow these rules, you can do it.
Mm.
Yeah.
The other one as well, I think, is like with I would say that it's far more important that when you've got your deck list. So I played Paladin, and we can talk about my deck a little bit in a minute, but I played Paladin to Legend. That's what got me from rank 3 to actual Legend. And there's two things about that which I think people can take away. One is that the Paladin deck I played was a tempo deck. It wasn't a control deck, it was a tempo deck. And I think for ladder right now, tempo decks are the best. You often hear, like, oh, what kind of deck should I play? What's best to ladder with? You've got to remember, when you watch a lot of these pros guys, that they're playing in tournaments, and tournament format is so different to playing ladder. So you might see this deck that does so well in a tournament and go and run it on ladder and get absolutely smashed. And I've actually heard, by watching streams, I've heard pro players who used an amazing druid deck that kicked ass in a tournament, the next day go on stream and go, I'm not going to use that on ladder, it'll get absolutely hammered. So, you know, you need to play, if you want to push a legend, you have to play decks that are going to give you consistent chances of winning. And that's the thing about tempo decks. First of all, they're quite fast to play, so you can play more games, and there is a quantity element to hitting legend. And the second thing is that they are more consistent. Like, a good example is, say you're playing Control Warrior then, and he's got, like, he's Dr. Boom, and you're thinking, oh, I just need my BGH, just need my BGH, and I've got him. Well, if you don't draw BGH in the four cards in your hand, what's your plan? It's not consistent that you're going to get BGH, right? Like, you will get BGH, and if you've got two of them, you'll get BGH 50% of the time more, but it's still not consistent strategy than saying, okay, every game I'm going to have 4-1 drops in my deck. Every game I'm going to have 6-2 drops. Every game I'm going to have 6-3 drops. So now the odds of me getting in my mulligan a 1, 2, and a 3 drop are so much better because I've played that. And also, you're going to get value, right? If you're playing on tempo, like this turn, it's turn 2, I play a 2 drop. This turn's turn 3, I play a 3 drop. Maximizing your mana. You're also going to have, again, consistent chances of removing your opponent's threat. Like, a guy was saying the other day about not playing Flamestrike in Mechmage and not playing these removals like Equality. I don't play Equality anymore in Paladin. And that was such a hard thing for me to get my head around, because I'm a Paladin player through and through, and I love Equality. I can't... Why would you not play Equality? Well, again, if I've played turns 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I've now got, you know, Zombie Chow, Knife Juggler, Aldor Peacekeeper, Pilot of Shredder, and a Sludge Belcher on board, and I'm playing against your Control Paladin, and you're sat in there with your Equality in your hand, well,
yeah.
You know, or let's say you play, you're a Handlock and you play a Giant, I don't need a BGH. I can just kill that Giant because I've got 4 minions on board. Do you know what I mean? I've got 11 points of damage on the board.
Mm.
Do you see what I mean? So, like, that Giant suddenly doesn't mean shit. Like, a Giant only means something when you've got an empty board and they play a Giant on the board. And you're like, if I don't have BGH, I am screwed. That's why Handlock's a great deck, because it can play a card that's an 8-8 on turn 4. When else can you play an 8-8 on turn 4? unstable portal, maybe. I don't know. But it's hard
almost
to...
Almost not even. Oh. No, it'd be turn 5 for that.
Well, not if you drew Felreaver from unstable
yeah,
portal.
Yeah, that's
it. I guess. Yeah, that's the only way you do it. Yeah. So, but anyway, like, that's the point. So, like, tempo deck. And the second thing is, what I was saying about it, is it's far more important to learn how to mulligan correctly with your deck. So, something I'm trying to learn with Mech Mage, and something that's got me a bit better with my Mech Mage. I'm not a great Mech Mage player at all. But what I'm learning is the difference between the top players is how well they mulligan with Mech Mage. Like, you've got to know when to be disciplined. You've got to know when to throw away that spider tank and that piloted shredder. You know, you've got to know when to get rid of those because you need your one drop. You know, you've got to be ultra aggressive to get that one drop. But you've also got to know when you can play a slower curve. So, like, I'm playing Paladin. Do I want to play a Clockwork Gnome? Or do I get rid of that if I've got it in my hand? Because if I play that turn one and he plays, what's that annoying, North Shire Cleric, well, he can kill my Clockwork Gnome and then heal, and he gets card draw, and he's got tempo on me. So that one drop was a liability. Do you see what I mean? But it's not necessarily a liability if I've got Mech Warper in my hand, because now I can play Mech Warper and that and get a tempo advantage in the same turn. So, or with a Noyatron, for example. So that's the other thing, is looking at... Look, there's so much in your mulligan to think about. It's like, how do these cards complement each other, for example? Maybe you'll throw away... what's the one that freezes, Franco? The two drop that freezes.
The Snow Chugger.
Chugger.
Yeah, Chugger, Chugger. Maybe you throw away Chugger. You know, because not because it's not a two drop or because it's a great card, but because it doesn't synergize with either the other cards you've got or it's not good against the guy that you're playing against. Like, let's say you're playing against a guy who doesn't use a weapon and has lots of three drop removals, like Mage, for example. You know, maybe it's not the best time to play it. I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I'm just giving kind of like examples here. Another one is, in your mulligan, is thinking about what are they likely to play in their first two or three turns. So when you're playing against Hunter, for example, I want my Armorsmith in a Warrior drop because playing a turn two, a 1/4, is brilliant against Hunter, right? Because they have so many minions that only have one health. Like, they'll play Web Spinner, sometimes they play Loot Hoarders, stuff like that. Even Mad Scientist Cat and Spiders, they can't get rid of a 1/4 very easily. So... that playing that Armorsmith is fantastic on turn two. But playing it against Priest is not as good because, again, like the North Shire Cleric thing, you know, what you actually want to be doing is playing minions with at least that can do three damage, right? So you can clear that. So thinking about what are you playing around, like you're playing against Rogue, they're going to have Backstab. Is having Knife Juggler turn two a good idea? Probably not, you know? Like, in fact, they're probably even a Knife Juggler turn two if they didn't have Backstab. So... there's so many ways for them to get rid of it on that turn. Are you better off using it turn 5, where you do Knife Juggler into Muster for Battle and get some extra value, for example? So that's a massive part. And I think Chance said it. He said, I watch, he's an awesome Zoo player and an awesome Tempo Paladin player. And he said, look, often I watch guys in the top 5 and I know they've lost the game from their mulligan. They've mulliganed wrong. They don't know why they've mulliganed wrong. And that's such a big thing to consider, is what am I playing against and how are these cards gonna work for me?
All right, well, taking all that into account, you know, as much as you're sort of talking about the different techniques it takes to actually get into the legendary status and things, we know the truth of it is that it's the deck that you were playing. So why don't you tell us about the deck you were playing?
Okay, so I played several decks last season, and I also gave myself breaks, which is something we didn't mention. I think that's really important. Like, give yourself some break, have a few days off, don't play, and then come back and have a good 3-4 hour session. But I played three decks that really helped me climb the ladder. So from rank 17 to rank 10, I mainly played Oil Rogue, and that climbed me 7 ranks. From rank 10 down to rank 4, I played Mech Mage and a little bit of Combo Druid. They were the two that kind of got me actually moving up the ladder. You know, you kind of play some decks and you win one, lose one, that kind of thing. But the ones that actually got me, you know, win streaks and shooting up, it was Druid and Mech Mage that got me up to, like, rank 4. And then from rank 4, 3, somewhere around that, pretty much up to Legend, I just exclusively played this Paladin deck. So
that's consistent. I mean, that's consistent 1-for-1 winning at that point. You know, I mean, obviously the other decks will get you up there, even if you're not sort of If you've got if you've got a 50-50 win, as long as you're getting the wins in rows, you'll still get up there, up to what rank is it? You stop losing that bonus.
Rank five.
That's it. Yeah. So your paladin one is the one that's actually you have a consistently high win ratio on it. So what exactly was the paladin?
So the paladin list. I'll go through it now. The main difference, the main thing I want to say is in the one drop, I started off with two zombie chows. But I actually ended up dropping these zombie chows, and this actually, to me, was something that really turned the deck around. I'm sure so many people will disagree with this. I'm sure a lot of pros will disagree with it, especially as a tempo deck. But it honestly was a massive turnaround in me winning games and winning games quickly with this deck. And that is, I played two Leper Gnomes as my one drop. So I changed. So
why do you think that was such a difference then?
Well, I zombie chow is amazing, and I really rate it. But I think what was happening was that there were certain games, certain matchups, and I can't remember exactly which ones, but there were certain matchups that, a zombie chow giving the 5 health back early on doesn't really matter if you get it turn 1, but there'd be later on in the game where I'd want to play a card, but I'd have zombie chow in my hand, and it would really help me with trading the board, but I'd give him his health back, and what happened is I'd lose the game, but I'd got this guy down to 6-7 health. So you think, well, I gave him 10 health back over this game. Now, the problem with it is that what some people will argue is they probably say, yeah, but it doesn't matter. You're playing a tempo deck, and Zombie Chow turn 1 gives you tempo, right? Because you can trade more effectively. But the problem is, my argument would be, yeah, but it doesn't give me tempo if it's, say, turn 7. And in order to trade, I only have a few cards in hand, and one of them Zombie Chow. And I need to play that card to keep my tempo up to trade effectively. But if I've been playing that card, I'm now going to die and give him the health back. So it loses tempo late game, is kind of what I'm saying. Whereas what Leper Gnome does is it still gives me a one drop. And I think the meta at the time as well, I think I could trade pretty well with a lot of, a lot of decks pretty efficiently. Okay, it's not great against Priest, but Priest wasn't too prominent. And I figured, actually, I'll do that. Now, not only is it trading as a one drop, but obviously it's doing that extra 2 damage. So I go from giving 10 damage away during the game, or at least 5 damage, because I'm at least playing 1, to actually dealing 4 damage from the Leper Gnome's death rattle. So that's quite a swing, right? That's quite a swing when you think about over a whole game. You're talking about potentially a 14 health swing. So think about a game that you lost where you had your opponent on 14 health.
Yeah, it's a massive difference. I mean, I see the sort of arguments for the Zombie Chow, especially the arguments of he's better early. Yeah, certainly, that's true. But I've had the same problem as you, dude. If you don't get him out early, you're just like, well, I mean, I do want to play him because he is still viable for trading, but I don't want to give out this health.
Yeah.
And what you've done is reversed it, I guess. What you've done is sort of reversed that effect from giving 10 to taking 4.
And Leper Gnome's just so much better late game, right? Because you could use it off a knife juggle to get value. You could Defender of Argus your Leper Gnome. That extra 2 damage gives you reach. It's almost like a mini frostbolt. It's almost like it's reach to try and get over the line. So it's so much better late game than Zombie Chow. So anyway, the deck was two Leper Gnomes. I'll go through the whole deck, and then you guys can ask me questions about cards and stuff if you want. Yeah. So I got 2 Leper Gnomes, 2 Knife Jugglers, 2 Shielded Mini-Bots, 1 Cog Hammer, 2 Muster for Battle, 1 Acolyte of Pain, 2 Aldor Peacekeepers, 1 Big Game Hunter, 2 True Silver Champions, 2 Consecrations, 1 Defender of Argus, 2 Pilot of Treaders, Low Feb, 2 Quartermasters, 2 Sludge Belchers, 1 Stampeding Kodo, 1 Sylvanas, Black Knight, Dr. Boom, and Tyrion.
Yeah, good.
And that deck's up on, if people want to see, they can go on our Facebook page on Project Hearthstone Become Legendary, and you can see the deck is up there.
So, some of the interesting bits of it is you've got, you said about not having a quality, but you still have Consecration. Obviously one of the best combos in the game, and I think it remains that way, is Equality Consecration. But you've not gone for that, but you've kept the Consecration in there, so is that just in order to sort of have something to kill that little rush that you get from, Face Hunter and things?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tempo deck, right? So the plan should be that either you're ahead on board or you should have minions on board. quite often with this deck, especially like things like Mustafa Battle, you know, you've often got lots of minions on board, and obviously the hero power as well. And what I find is, the thing about Consecrate is that it helps you in so many ways. So first of all, it can be a finisher. Like, he could have a taunt up, but if you can play Consecrate, you still do 2 damage to enemy face. That's a big thing. Another thing is, like, again, if he's, you might have all these small minions, but they don't do much damage. So by playing a Consecrate, you can deal a few, those, you know, like, say you're playing against things like a Yeti, it's got 5 health. You know, doing that 2 damage, now you can finish it off with a Knife Juggler or, you know, something that has, like, less, you know, a Lepinome or something that has a bit less attack power. The other nice thing about it is it helps you rest. Like, what you're trying to do with this board is wrestle board control. So Equality Consecrate's not great because it costs me 6 mana to Equality Consecrate. I clear the board, but then I haven't developed the board, right? I haven't put anything onto the board.
You're not getting any control because the other guy gets to play and then he's got control straight back.
He just goes, okay, I'll play a Pilot Shredder and, you know, a Spider Tank. And now he's got board control. You're in the same position that you were in. Whereas with Consecrate, what I can do is I can have a couple of minions down, play Consecrate and play another minion. So it actually swings the tempo in my favour. Like, especially if you're in like a mech mage war where he's playing lots of minions, you're playing lots of minions, you're violently trying to wrestle for control of the board. And that Consecrate, if you've got 2 down already, he's got 3 down, you Consecrate and play a Pilot Shredder turn 8, that can be the swing that you needed, and now you're in board control. Same with True Silver Champion. You know, True Silver's just such a great, great, great weapon. I think it's still my favourite weapon in the game. Death Spite is a serious challenger. But I think True Silver's just such a good weapon. You know, it's the same idea. I've got minion down, I can True Silver, I can kill something big, I can do the damage and then trade with my minion, and I can still play another minion. And I think Equality, the other problem with Equality, right, is what mana is Equality?
2.
Right, so if it's a tempo deck, what do I want to be doing with my 2 drops? I want to be playing my 2 drops on turn 2, right? But if I've got Equality, what does that encourage me to do on turn 2? It encourages me to sit and wait. Yeah, if you've got Equality as your turn 2 player, in your hand, you've drawn it, and you're playing against Zoo. Your mindset now is, okay, I'm going to let him fill the board with a few more things and then I'm going to Equality and clear his board, right? Mm. That's like, you're already out, you're not playing a tempo deck now, you're playing control, whereas in tempo you should be saying, play my shielded mini-bot on turn 2. Mm. Challenge his minions, get board control, stop Zoo having the board so that then he can't play onto the board and do all his buffing and Zoo shenanigans, and I've won this game. You know, and that's the other thing about Consecrate, Franco, is when you're ahead, say you're playing Zoo, and let's say I wrestle board control, it's turn 5, I've got 2 minions down and cleared his board. He now plays like 3 small minions on board. I can Consecrate and clear them, and now my 2 minions push forward, and so I push tempo again. It works. I think Consecrate can work well in a tempo deck, whereas I'm not sure Equality works as well. But don't get me wrong, there are ways of using it, and I've seen some players use one. There are ways of using Equality, especially because you've got hero power. Like, you can play a 1-1, and then you can have 1-1s on the board, and you can Equality a board, like Ramp Druid, for example. Equality in a Ramp Druid board and smacking in with your 1-1s is also quite powerful. So there are ways of using it. But I just think, for me, I'd rather fill my 2 drops. And I've only got, what, 2 drops? 4 2 drops. I've got 2 Knife Jugglers and 2 Shielded Mini Bots.
And 2 1 drops as well.
And 2 1 drops. Yeah. You know, and they're all minions, right? So every game, I'm consistently going to have some... I always have a minion to play turn 2. If you have not got a minion to play turn 2 with this deck, you have seriously mulliganed wrong. It's almost impossible. You know, best case scenario is I get a 1 and a 2 drop.
Hmm. All right, just a quick more general question from me. It seems like every deck I look at has Dr. Boom in it nowadays. Why is he so good?
Who, Dr. Balance?
Dr. Balance, mate, Dr. Balance.
Dr. Broken. Well, he's just insane, isn't he? I mean, like, what's the best answer for Dr. Boom is Black Knight. And if you think about it...
Black Knight?
Sorry, not Black Knight.
Big game.
Big game, yeah. BGH, right?
I was going to say,
So you think about that. Even if I BGH you, right? I BGH you, and you've still got 2 minions that can kill the BGH, by the way, even if they didn't have a death rattle. So even if they were both silenced, they still killed the BGH, yeah? Mm. But they do have a death rattle, and that death rattle deals 2 to 4 damage, right? So the average is, what, 6 damage? Is that right? Is it 2 to 4?
It's 1 to 4, so it's more like 4.
Yeah,
1
to 4, yeah.
So it's 2 and so it'd be about 5 or 6 damage, right, is the average. Yeah. So if you think about the best case scenario being Dr. Boom, and I can still do the 6 damage from the plus the 2 damage of them attacking. So I'm potentially doing 6 to 8 damage, and that's after you played the best answer to the card.
Yeah.
Now let's imagine you don't have the best answer to the card.
That's done another 7 damage on top of that.
The value that you get from Dr. Boom is insane, and that's why he hasn't even been dropped, even though people know that everyone's playing BGH. He's still a great tempo player. And that guy, I mean, oh my god, like, there's so many cool things people are doing now. Like, I've seen people do stuff like Warrior guys, where they use the Death Spite. They charge the Death Spite and then they play Boom. So they play Boom aggressively. So they play him. God. Then they use the Death Rattle so that they get the boom, boom, 2 fireworks off straight away. You know, like, it's so aggressive. Like, there's just so many. Dr. Boom as well is like an AoE. So what? Say you're playing Mage. Would you rather have Dr. Boom or a Flame Strike? Now, there are certain situations where Flame Strike is better. Like, if you didn't do that 4 damage across the board that turn, you'd lose the game. So there are certain situations where Flame Strike's better. But again, in a tempo deck like Mech Mage, Dr. Boom's just hands down better. Because you can play Dr. Boom, and as long as you're not going to die that turn that you're playing, he still is an AoE. He will clear the board, right? Like, so it's just such a... he's definitely, in my eyes, he's the... I could see them making 2 card changes next after Undertaker's now been nerfed, finally. I think the next 2 to think about of a possible nerf are Dr. Boom, number 1, and then maybe BGH. There's some talk about him nerfing BGH because...
4 drop, maybe, for BGH?
No, I'd like to see him change the rule, because if you think about it, Brian Kibler wrote a great article about this on what's his website? He's got a great website. We'll do him a little shout-out, because it's really... Brian Kibler is a guy who is a massive Magic player. I don't know if he's world champion, and now he just does gaming and makes games and plays, and that's his living. BMK Gaming, he writes really good articles. You should definitely go and check out BMK Gaming. He's done some good stuff on Mech Mage as well, so check that out. Anyway, he was saying about how... What were we just talking about?
BGH. Big game, wasn't it?
So what he was saying about BGH, he said, is it's a fun killer. Because if you think about it, he said, look how many cards are in Hearthstone that nobody ever takes. And why did they never take it? Simply because of BGH. Like, you can't take... What's that 9 drop that spits out Lepinomes? You know what I'm trying to mean?
Oh, yeah, it's like Mechanomeg Engineering.
You can't play that guy. Deathwing. You can't play Deathwing when BGH is back. Imagine how good Deathwing would be if BGH wasn't in the game.
Yeah, very difficult.
He would be worth 10 mana, right? He'd be awesome. But to play a 10 mana card, lose all my cards, and then for 3 mana, you kill him. That's so unbalanced. Like, so what basically I'm saying about BGH is that the problem with him as a card is the mechanic, is that he kind of eliminates a huge part of the game, of a huge part of the collection. Think how different Hearthstone as a game would be if you could start to take so many more of those late game big card minions and stuff, because you're not worried about BGH, and you'd be trading these big cards. Like, you'd have a 9 and an 8 drop, and I'd have like a 9 and 8 drop, and we'd be trading. How much fun would that be? Rather than now, it's just like BGH. So that's why I think there's an argument for nerfing BGH. He's not inherently broken, but what he's
just such a useful tool that everyone really uses, because you're always going to come up against something that's useful to it.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Kibler articulates it way better than I am doing right now. But he takes the fun out of a lot of the card collection. He takes the fun out of it. You cannot play him in the thing. And so in that sense, he's killing off about 25% of the game. There's no other card that really stops you from taking like a good 70 cards or 100 cards from this game. There's no other card that does that. But BGH does. You know, and that's an argument for getting rid of BGH. But I think Dr. Boom, oh man, that guy so needs a nerf.
I think even with BGH, let's say you do remove the rule for removing 7 attack minions and what have you, I think he does need something, because if you just take that away immediately, he just becomes another 4-2 minion drop, and he's just another generic minion, not particularly exciting. I'd like to see him do something with maybe a rework in some other way.
Yeah. How would you guys nerf Dr. Boom? Franco, how would you do it?
I'd give him BGH stats and costs, and then call him BGH.
BGH, okay.
Okay.
I mean, I've got no idea. Like, it's it's not something I think much about in terms of, although it's something I've done in a lot of games, you know, it's not something I think much about when it comes to Hearthstone in terms of, like, how things should be adjusted. Like, I understand that some cards are powerful and, you know, very useful in things, but I don't often get into the dialogue in my head of should that card change or should that card not be around. So it's difficult for me to then go, well, if it should change, what should it change to? You know?
It's such a fun card. Like, I really like the concept of it. There's no other card like it, right? It's a really unique card, and I wouldn't want to see the fun taken out of it. I mean, some people have said maybe it's the bombs that need nerfing, so they only do say 1 to 2 damage. Yeah. That would be reasonable. Another one that people have said is maybe do you nerf Boom himself? Do you make him a 7/5? I mean, I still think he should be 7 attack. I definitely think he should be BGH if you're going to have BGH.
But if you're going to nerf BGH anyway.
Yeah, but then if they nerf BGH, then Dr. Boom's not as good because there'll be more big cards anyway. Does that make sense? So it'd be much easier to deal with Dr. Boom. But in the current meta, let's assume BGH stays the same. I'd kind of like to see Dr. Boom become a 7/5. I'd like to see more ways of removing Boom himself, or you keep him a 7/7 and you change the bombs somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few different options in how you could change him. Maybe I'm lazy, so I was going to suggest upping his mana cost to 8, but you could also do the 7/5, but then you could also maybe do 1/3s on the bombs rather than 1/4s, because the 4, if you get 2/4 hits to your face, that really, really hurts, and reducing that to a 3, making it 6 damage, it isn't so bad, plus it makes it more kind of something that you're more likely to want to hit the minions on the board rather than the face, because it isn't going to do so much damage to them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
I think maybe that's the way to go, is like just try and reduce the damage of the bombs at the very least, you know, because as they are just now, like the bombs on their own can do more damage than a fireball.
They can do more damage than Dr. Boom.
Like a fireball's 4 mana, so
think about this, think of it this way, guys, right? So Dr. Boom costs 7 mana to play that card, yeah? And Azadrake costs 5 mana, yeah?
Yeah.
So one of the two bombs, not even like the bomb attacking, you kill the bomb, and the damage from that bomb could kill a 5 card Azadrake. That's one bomb, not even attacking. Then you've got another bomb that can attack and also do 4 damage, and then you've got a 7/7, all for 7 mana. Now, I know Azadrake obviously draws a card and he gives spell damage, he does other things, but just as an example, I mean, that tells you that there's something not quite right.
I think there's so many different things you can do to Dr. Boom is because there's so much in his kit, and you're only paying 7 mana for
it. Like, he's like 4 cards in one, isn't he? He's 3 cards in one, isn't he? He's just... But that's what I mean, he's just a fun card. I wouldn't want to change him. I wouldn't want him to say, oh, no, his bombs don't do any damage, they just come as 1/1 minions. That's just like, you've kind of lost the fun of the card. But I mean, something, I don't know.
I guess that's why we're not game designers.
We're not.
Right, I feel as if we're waffling on a bit, and there's every chance that there is actually going to be an interview on this episode. If not, then we're just waffling on a bit. So it might be a good time to bring our little discussion to an end, and maybe talk about something else, or just...
I was going to say is, obviously, we've just finished that season, so we're into the next season now. So I thought I was just going to get to finish up, talk about what I'm planning for this season, see what you guys are running and thinking of making a run with this season. So Tom, let's start with you, buddy. What are you running at the minute, and what are you going to be trying to use and learn with this season?
Right, I've had a bit of a clear out of my decks, and because mainly it was just like all kinds of random stuff, and I'd like one for each class, if you know what I mean. It wasn't too good for me, so I've got 6 up to right now. I've got my old druid deck, which, as you say, is always thereabouts, and I've got 2 hunter decks. I stole BJ's paladin deck, because if BJ can hit legendary with it, then I can. So, well, I'm not sure about that, but I've got a mech mage on the go, and I've still got that rogue deck. So, mainly I've been doing hunter in the dead of night, because that's what got me to the highest rank I've ever been, which is rank 6. But my aim this season is to try and hit rank 5, and I'm mainly going to be bouncing around with my tempo paladin deck and my hunter. Do you want me to get... In fact, there's no point in me going through my hunter, because if you just Google Chucky's face hunter deck, you'll get it. So yeah, that's pretty much me. Not too much that's particularly exciting, only aiming for rank 5 and trying to learn some new decks, because as it stands, I've mainly been a hunter and paladin main, not really been playing anything else. And by learning the other decks, you can learn how what they do, how they work, and how I can play against them, and which cards I need to play around, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to do it though, Tom. You know, like have a couple of decks that you keep updating, but you you just learn the ins and outs of them. I think that's going to be, because have you hit five before, or was that the first?
I was one win away from five 2 seasons ago, and then last season I didn't really play too much Hearthstone because I was busy with work and what have you.
Yeah.
So I'm back on the wagon now, trying to get rank five at least.
Awesome. Well, good luck. And Franco, what are you doing?
Not much.
Moving
really.
House.
Yeah, kind of moving house to
it's
Thailand.
All happening. Moving to Thailand. Yeah.
So, like, I'm getting wee games in here and there, you know, and it's pretty much to the same pattern that I've been playing, you know, like trying to stick to the same deck and just sort of really get my head around one way of playing it, you know, before messing around with a lot of ideas and things. But really, I'm just not getting on too much because I'm in a process of either selling my life or packing my life. And I think the next time that we speak to each other, I will be on a beach in Thailand. Motherfuckers!
Destroyed on the Asian server by a load of Koreans.
Yeah, whatever, Frank. what he means, Tom, is he'll be sat in his apartment with his curtains closed playing Hearthstone on his iPad while the sunshine and the beach and all the hot chicks are running about on the beach. Yeah, that's where Frank
is. Yeah.
Coming
right.
To the man.
He'll be like, I'm in my new house. I've got Wi-Fi. Yes! Get my life back together again.
That's
here we
right.
go.
Well, dude, that's the only stipulation for every place that I'm going to. It's just like, have you got Wi-Fi? Is it a steady connection? You have yourself a guest.
You will be playing Diablo 3 with your dog.
Yeah. Well, it's...
I don't really want to get in a shit.
So what's your plan then for this season, BG? Are you going to try and hit Legend again, or have you got something beyond that? Are you going to try and get to a consistently hitting Legend area? Is that what you're going for?
The way my life's working at the minute is that I go if I've got the chance to do it without completely wrecking my work life, then I'll do it. So yeah, I would like to hit it again. And but what I've wanted to do is, like, I haven't really played Paladin this season. I've not touched it. Because what I want to do is, I want to have like at least three classes that I feel that I can hit Legend with. And right now, I would say that there are meta decks, like Mech Mage, for example, is a meta deck, but I don't feel I could hit Legend with Mech Mage because of all the things that we've just talked about. You know, I'm not. If I went back through all those things, do I study the mulligans? Do I know what I can't? I'm not at that level with that deck. You know, so. There, I want to get like a few more decks like to the same level of comfort and knowledge with that I had with the Paladin, and I feel like I'm kind of there with Oil Rogue, and I feel like I'm also very very rapidly, if not already there, getting there with Warrior. I'm playing Warrior and winning an awful lot on ladder right now, and I'm beating decks that I'm not supposed to beat, and. It's slow. It's slow going. It's one thing I'd say about Warrior. But I'm trying to play a slightly more tempo, still a control Warrior, but a slightly more tempo version. I've got Frothing Berserker in there. And it's working really well. So I feel like those decks are up there, and I could potentially hit Legend with any three of those. The other one as well, which is kind of maybe on that same tier, is Hunter. Maybe I'm just a little bit less knowledgeable, but I've got a deck from Nyman. Nyman hit. Rank one with this Hunter deck, which is more my style. I'm not really a face Hunter type player. I like the mid-rangey one with the snake trap and the freeze trap. And so I've got this deck, and it's really good fun, actually. I've been really enjoying using it. It's quite a lot to think about. But again, I might play that as well. So it's between those decks, really. They're the sort of four decks I really want to focus on this season. And if all else fails, and I get to like rank three and I'm really frustrated, then maybe I go back and just play this Paladin deck and see if I can hit it again.
So when do you think you'd make that sort of commitment to yourself? At what point this season would you be like, fuck all this experimenting bullshit, I'm going back to what I know?
Well, like I've already said, it's already what? It's only the 5th of March, so we're 5 days in, and I'm already at rank 9 or 10. And that's hard to do this early on. Like, all the players I've played, like the last 50 games I've played, are mainly Legend players. So... That's why I think I'm doing really well this season. And that's why I'm saying I actually feel like confident that with Oil Rogue or Warrior or maybe this Hunter deck that I probably could get to Legend with this season. So I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, and then probably once I hit top five, I'll see what happens to my win rates with each of the decks. And if it's kind of like win-lose, then I might switch to Paladin and see if I can make a push again with Paladin.
Cool. Well, good luck with that one, because obviously, like, we're all quite heavily invested in you consistently hitting Legend at this point, you know, because
no pressure, yeah.
Yeah, well, it just makes it like even more doable for us, essentially.
Well, I've got a US account, and I go on there, use it at the start of the season actually, and I do all my like dailies, get it up to rank 20, so I get my card back, and I'm slowly building my collection on there, so it's starting to build now. Actually, do a few decent-ish decks. I've got one friend on my US account. I'm still called BJ the Brave, so if there's any US followers, if you want to go on there and add me, I'm on there. And he come up and he messaged me the other day, and he's like, "Oh, congrats, I'm getting to Legend, man." And he's like, "That's it now, you've hit it once, you've got to do it every season." So like, it's, yeah, no pressure.
Pressure's on, buddy.
No pressure. No pressure. But what I would say is, like, as I said before, when I went from rank 3 to Legend, that's the most focused, concentrated games at Hearthstone I've ever played. So, like, I'm not, just because I've hit it once, it's no easier. I think, you know, you've got to make sure that you sit down, you say, right, I'm going to play now for 4 hours. I'm going to act those five things that we talked about today, mulligans, consciously going through my decisions. You've got to do that for 3 hours. If it's distractions, you haven't got the time to do it, I'd just say, just put it off, because you'll just end up losing. You'll just lose games and lose your ranking. So wait till you've actually got proper time you can commit to it and go for it. Yeah.
Cool. Nice one. All right. Well, it was nice having you on the show there, BJ. You know,
thanks a lot, mate. Any time. Yeah, good. Might come good. On again.
Mate, it's not often we get such an exclusive, like, completely bottom-ranked legendary player on the show. You know, normally if it's like a total bottom ranked legendary player, it's like some top ranked legendary player who just doesn't feel as if he's doing so well.
Experiment.
He's fucking around with decks, you know what I mean?
He's using a free to play deck.
That's it, yeah, totally. But
he's annoyed because it took him an extra 5 days to hit Legend with his free to play deck.
That's the one, yeah.
That's so Baldur Fist Augurs, baby.
It's been interesting getting a genuinely bottom ranked legendary player on the show and seeing what they have to say. So,
thanks to you, Franco, for, you know, like, keeping me humble while I'm achieving such dizzy heights.
Yeah,
well, one of my yearly goals. But I knew that this podcast with you would bring me right back down, crashing down to earth with the
mate. You were so excited. You were so excited when you first hit Legendary. You know what I mean? And I remember watching as well. I remember watching the game.
You came on and spectated, didn't you?
That's it. Yeah, we were having a wee chat about it and things at the time. You know, and like, you were so excited. You know, and. I was pleased for you, mate, but I just wasn't as pleased as you were.
I was sweating with adrenaline that game, because we were playing Priest, and I'm playing Priest, and obviously it's Priest, right? So it's so drawn out, and he just keeps healing. I've got him down to like 8 health, and then he heals, and he plays a taunt. I'm like, oh my god, can he just die? I'm like, yeah.
It was so exciting, BJ. Still excited about it.
I think it was a game where, like, we said earlier, I was trying to throw like Lepinomes on like turn 13. To just try and get that extra 2 points of damage from the death rat.
Yeah, I think it was funny because you were just like, you. I think you were so desperate to just get beat him that you were just like, should I put this down? Should I put this down? I'm like, mate, you've got like fucking 5 minions on the board and he's getting nothing. Leave it. I reckon you're okay with your control there, buddy. You're right, you could hold on to it in case he's got some kind of wipe coming. You know, you're just like, come on, fucking die. Hurry up and die, for fuck's sake.
It's perfectly both. You did it. We both know BJ's good under pressure. He doesn't panic at all.
I know, that's it. He's not panicking. I can just imagine his little bum hole going like a rabbit's nostril. it was funny watching it, man. It was funny watching it. And well done and things, you know. And then hopefully next week we'll get a real legendary player on the show.
Yeah, we are. I'm actually trying to set... What I'm trying to set up is a guest interview with a US player called Ryzen. And for those who follow... and the streams on Twitch, Ryzen's a really, really good rogue player. He's hit top 10 legend, and he's also in the BlizzCon standings right now to qualify for World Championships, so he's up there. And we're looking at doing a rogue special. He recently did a 24-hour rogue-a-thon stream. He just played the same rogue deck for 24 hours solid. He stopped for food every 8 hours, like just went and got literally grabbed some food, but he streamed the whole time. It's incredible. And we're going to get him on because I think rogue is a class that... A lot of people find quite complex and quite confusing, and this Oil Rogue deck is very powerful right now. So getting him on to just talk us through what you need to know about Rogue, some of the basics, some of the foundations, and then specifically how this Oil Rogue is so good in the current meta. That's what we're hoping to do next. So, yeah.
Cool. Nice one. Looking forward to that then. Good. Cool. All right then, folks. It was nice having you on, and we'll catch up with everybody within the next 2 weeks, I guess. I'll be in Thailand, bitches. Yeah!
Whoa! Legendary!
And for the first time ever, that legendary soundbite actually sounds appropriate. So that's us for this week, folks. I hope you found a useful episode in your own quest to hit legendary. And I think what you really need to understand is that while BJ can, on occasion, come across as intelligent, he is in fact an out-and-out moron. And I mean that truly. What he is good at is finding out how other people are successful at various things and then replicating that success for himself after a lot of practice. So if he's achieved this with a full-time job in the middle of setting up his own business after just having moved house and in the midst of planning a wedding, despite his very limited intellectual capabilities, anyone can. So I hope that inspires you. As usual, I'll stick up all the links to our various blah 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 etc. Ah, who gives a fuck? I'm off to Thailand, bitches! Whoop whoop!
And now, the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friends, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I've traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Now get to the chopper!